While Crawford Killian has a piece of advice for aspiring writers, he says this: do not read Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, do not read Hemingway's For Whom the Bell Tolls, Jack Kerouac's On the Road, and seven other well-known novels. In a piece for the British Columbian daily, The Taai, Killian lists 10 modern classics, or books that most of us think of as classics, that are very harmful, he says, to aspiring writers, not because they're necessarily bad books, but because, he writes, quote, their readable styles look so easy that they might seduce a young writer into imitating them. And he says some of them just cannot be imitated. So to our writers out there, I think you know what he's talking about. We want to know from you, which books can you not get out of your head when you're writing? And what books do you wish that you had never read for that very reason? Our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. So Crawford Killian, a writer and columnist for The Taai, joins us via Skype from his home in Vancouver, British Columbia. Thanks very much for coming on to the show.
It's a real pleasure.
So you tell aspiring writers, and let's just say writers, in no uncertain terms, to stay away from certain books. Why? What's the polluting factor in those books?
I think you might call it the kids don't try this at home effect. In many cases, certainly in my own case as a teenager in the 50s, I read those books, and it took me a while to recover from the seductive influence of, for example, Catcher in the Rye, because it meant I could essentially be a stenographer for my own teenage whining, and hey, I'd write a novel that way. Well, it didn't exactly work out that way, and it took me a while to recover, say, from the influence of Catcher in the Rye or For Whom the Bell Tolls. And in the case of The Lord of the Rings, I that was a long recovery, and I was truly discouraged 40 years later to see what teenagers were writing on their hot new computers, and they were doing elves and orcs and, you know, magic swords and all that stuff, just like Lord of the Rings. And you have no idea how that discouraged me.
They were doing it, but just not as well, is what you're saying.
It was that they thought that was the way you were supposed to do it, instead of thinking, gee, that was kind of cool. What could I do that would be different, but cool too?
So they
were too imitative.
And so you're not saying don't imitate The Catcher in the Rye because it's a bad book. You're saying don't imitate it because it's a good book and you can't
exactly
do it.
Exactly. And it's really a kind of a one-off. J.D. Salinger never followed up with anything remotely like it himself. And why should we think that yet another, you know, teenage Kvetcher is really what the reading public is yearning for?
Now, you write, on top of your list is Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand.
Yep.
You write very acerbically about a number of these books, and you say this at least has the virtue of being so widely read and discussed that we really don't need to read it ourselves. I tried a couple of times and bogged down badly.
And it's true.
And so you're making it sound like you actually don't think it's a very good book.
Well, it was a powerful book for a lot of young people, especially young Americans and some Canadians as well, simply because it seemed to be so confident of itself and its radical point of view. And an impressionable kid could read that and think, oh, so that's the way the world really works. Well, now I know something and I'm smarter than my folks and all the dummies around me who think that they should take care of each other.
Well, we have
spent half a century dealing with the consequences of that.
As you say in your note on this, not to mention Rand's impact on Alan Greenspan.
Yes.
We're asking our listeners who are aspiring writers or who are writing to talk to us about, you know, this concept of yours. And I think folks get it, that some of these things might come back to haunt you. So let's go to Eric in Rochester, New York. Hi, Eric. You're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi. I wish I had never read Infinite Jest or anything else by David Foster Wallace.
Because?
And that's because I just feel that since reading that, all of my sentences have gotten five times longer than they used to be, and I use much bigger words than I need to use. and it's just a really, really futile attempt to imitate his style of writing.
Well, let's yeah. stay on the let's stay on the line for a minute, Eric, because I'd like to actually have you and Killian Crawford Killian interact a little bit on this, because the question I want to have is, can you really avoid imitating? In other words, Eric, why was this so seductive to you? Why didn't you just read it, put it down, and go back to who you were?
Well, I guess it kind of really appealed to me because in some ways it sort of resembled things that I had already been doing or already wanted to be doing with my own style of writing. And just seeing it done so perfectly and so elegantly and so, you know, convincingly with such coherent arguments, you know, Wallace uses such, it's like there's no way to escape the arguments that he makes. There's no way to escape the kind of, like, rational sequence of his thought because it's so clearly laid out. It made me want to try and write like that.
So, Crawford, let's talk a little bit about the trap that Eric is in.
I understand Eric's situation very, very well because every writer who really makes an impact on us, in effect, is giving us permission to write like that. Mm-hmm. And often for a young writer, you think, wow, I can actually say something like that. I can use those long, elaborate sentences or that, you know, high-octane vocabulary. And you do it. But chances are the model you're trying to follow understood what could and could not be done in that style and was much more careful about using those techniques than a young apprentice writer is likely to be.
All right. Eric, thanks very much for your call. But at the same time, Crawford, isn't imitation at some level critical to the process of learning how to write for yourself?
Oh, yes. One of the things I used to teach my own novel writing students was that essentially we're always telling the same story. It's the fall from Eden and the struggles in the desert of this world and the hope of achieving the heavenly city at the end. You know, we are all telling stories that are variations on that theme. Nevertheless, it should be what we find in one particular writer should be simply what we can use to say what we want to say, not just to be a megaphone or an echo chamber mm-hmm. for some other writer.
Let's go to Rebecca in Kendallville, Indiana. Hi, Rebecca. You're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi. I kind of agree. I read Charles Bukowski. I have almost all of his books that I can find, and I find myself in my writing almost imitating his style, not because I'm trying to, but it's almost that his writing is so ingrained in the way I read, it comes out whether I try to make it or not.
How good are you at being him?
I wouldn't say very good, but I wouldn't even want to compare myself to him anyway.
Yeah.
I think what you have to do is to pull back a little way and ask yourself, what is it about David Foster Wallace or Charles Bukowski or J.D. Salinger that really gets to me? Is it a voice? Is it an attitude? Is it a vocabulary? And then try to apply what you have abstracted from that writer into a form that will let you say your own thing in your own way.
So Rebecca, thanks for your call. So Crawford, it sounds like you're saying it's fine to be inspired, yep. but not to be looking for a template.
Not really. What you need to do is bear in mind that you are entering a conversation with everybody you have ever read when you start writing. And you don't want to simply say ditto, ditto, ditto mm-hmm. to the authors that you're conversing with. What you want to do is to say, that's a very interesting point you made. Now let me take it a little further and show you what could also be done in this regard.
Eric in Kansas City, Missouri, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Hello.
Hi, Eric.
The author I wish I'd never read is just Kurt Vonnegut, and the first book I read by him was Slaughterhouse-Five, but I just fell in love with that book and the way he wrote so much that the previous caller said, anytime I see a Kurt Vonnegut title, I buy it. And I love so much about what he does, and I think he's so deeply ingrained in me is because I didn't truly know the joys of reading until I read Slaughterhouse-Five for the first time. And I don't know if that was him so much as a great author as much as it was just maybe my time to start loving books. But again, it just, his style is so choppy, but yeah, so elegant and so smooth that it's just like, man, I'm like, my heart cries out to write like that. And I just want to pay him homage and share the experiences I've had with him. But again, I want to recreate it. And so now I can't write, you know, an article for the staff newsletter or a text message to my wife without, you know, somehow pulling it back and saying, oh, my God.
All right. So I want Crawford to tell us, what's the treatment for Eric's problem?
Oh, so it goes. Yeah, I was a pushover for Kurt Vonnegut when I was in college. And by then, I think my own style had been sufficiently firmed up that I survived. You could almost call what Vonnegut does a kind of stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
You know, he sets you up and then he gives you a heck of a punchline. Oh. And you're wowed, he's got you into the next chapter. And it's a brilliant technique, but it's Vonnegut's technique.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Eric, thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation on NPR News. Crawford Killian, in terms of Eric's problem, his Vonnegut problem, mm-hmm. what's the solution for him to get Vonnegut out of his head?
Probably to read a lot more writers who are not like Vonnegut, but who are nevertheless extremely powerful, extremely witty, masters of the language, and not necessarily just the English language. There's a lot of great writing being done in translation from other languages. One of the authors I say you can't imitate, but you can still learn from, is Gabriel Garcia Marquez, mm-hmm. whose 100 Years of Solitude is one of the most astounding books of the century. And again, these writers are telling you, in effect, don't worry about the choice of words or the plot or the kind of characters we're using. Think about, for example, writing a century-long history of a family. And what kind of family would it be if they grew up in Schenectady instead of Macondo, Colombia? You know, play games with what you've learned from the writers you love. And see where they're not the last word.
It's interesting.
They're gateways to somewhere else.
And interesting you're going in that direction, because I'm listening to you and I'm thinking some folks could take what you're saying as shutting down their aspiration. They can read something and say, I can never do that. And you are saying, yeah, you can't do that. But the lesson I can't write ever.
I'm saying understand what they're doing and then try to do the same thing, which is to carry on the conversation from the previous generation of great writers.
Let's go to Ariel in Philadelphia. Hi, Ariel. You're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi.
Hi.
My book would be actually the Harry Potter series. Uh-huh. That is exactly what you were saying, is that I feel like I can never compare to that idea. Like, the fact that she came up with something like that, wrote something so amazing and that became so popular. And I love that fantasy genre. And it's just hard for me to feel like I could ever write something as amazing as that. So I'm always discouraged. And every time I read her book, I'm like, oh, this is awful. I could never compare to her. So that's my big dilemma, is I feel I always get discouraged when I start writing.
Yeah. You don't want to be, you don't want anyone to think that you're just the next J.K. Rowling. You want people to think you're the Ariel, and wow, why didn't anyone else ever think of what this woman has come up with to write about? Because it's, you know, Rowling essentially took a couple of old genres like the British schoolboy story and spun them into something completely new. You might find something equally possible simply by taking a couple of the genres you love, like this fantasy series, and applying it in a different way. Whether it was you wouldn't have to have Quidditch in it, and I hope you wouldn't, but you might indeed be able to say something interesting about the idea of a culture that that lives on and depends on magic. And there you might come up with something that I would love to read.
Ariel, call us in 2 years.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Let's go to Jeremiah in Pittsburgh. Hi, Jeremiah. You're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
This is a great show today. I guess for me, Stephen King has probably been the spoiling of my writing. And also because of that, he has the On Writing, his book on where he goes into how to write, basically. And I think that, you know, not only do I get discouraged with trying to write and find myself copying his style, but then I resort to his book as a handbook to write similar to how he writes, which kind of puts me in a position of just feeling like, should I just give this up?
And I think his book isn't How to Write, but How I Write is what
how,
that book is.
How I Write, yeah.
Yeah. So, in many cases, what you find is that the advice that writers give comes out of their own personal experience and is not always applicable to other people. But I do it too. I've got a little blog called Writing Fiction, which is largely about what the heck I've learned in publishing 11 novels about the actual, you know, practical techniques of it. And with Stephen King, I suspect that his talent is as much metabolic as intellectual, that he simply has more energy than most of us will ever have.
I just want to share, and I'm sorry, Crawford, in the last few seconds, we have an email from somebody who says he was stuck writing like Hunter Thompson, a newspaper reporter, Steve, in Arizona. And then he says, let me tell you, the Gonzo style really doesn't fit when it comes to reports on city council meetings and the like. Thank you, Crawford Killian. You're an author and columnist for the Taiji and online daily out of British Columbia, who joined us from Skype. Tomorrow, it's Talk of the Nation, Science Friday, and Ira Flato will be here to look at science and the art behind visual effects. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm John Donvan in Washington.